Jaya Radha Madhava Kuncha Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kuncha Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giridhara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Ashtotara Shatashi Srimad, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Hare Krishna. Thank you everyone for coming to the Bhagavatam class today. I'd like to beg the blessings of all the senior devotees, and most of you are my seniors here at this point. Please shower your mercy on me and forgive me for any mistakes, and if you hear any mistakes, please point them out, correct them. As Vaisheshika Prabhu likes to say, I live to be corrected. I'm not quite at that standard yet, but at least I can ask for it so that maybe one day I'll like to be corrected. I just wanted to share one verse before we actually get into the Bhagavatam. It's a verse from the Bhagavatam, and the best way we can glorify the Bhagavatam is with the Bhagavatam, because it's pramanam amalam, it's the most pure pramanam, it's the most high pramanam, it's the best place we can take anything from is the Bhagavatam. So what better way to glorify Bhagavatam than with Bhagavatam? It's like offering water to the Ganga. You take the water from the Ganga, and you offer it to her, and you give it to her. So you take her, and you offer her to her, and it's the best way you can worship the Ganga. So, something like that we do with the Bhagavatam. So this is a verse. This is actually to invoke the blessings of Suta Goswami and Shukadeva Goswami for the speaker. Our acharyas, they say that this verse, it encapsulates the mood that one should aspire to imbibe when they speak the Bhagavatam. This is the second verse of the second chapter. Yam pravrajantam anupetam apeta krityam dvaipayano virahakatara ajuhava putre titan mayatayataravo bhinedus Tam sarva bhuta hridayam munim anatosmi. So yam pravrajantam, to that person who gave up everything and went away. Anupetam apetya kritam. Apetya, apetya kritiam. Having not undergone any sacred thread ceremony, not done any dharma, not done anything. Just going away, pravrajantam. Having gone away without any of that, dvaipayanaha and vyasadeva anupetam. He could not catch up to him even though he tried to. So this dvaipayana, this vyasadeva, he cried out, viraha katara ajuhava. He cried out in lamentation and in separation. Putreti putra, oh son, don't leave, please don't leave in separation. Tan mayataya tarvo bhinedus, tarva, all the trees, they echoed this same mood. And that was the only response that Vyasadeva got. He got an echo from the trees, his own voice, putra, oh son. O son, O son, O son. Tam sarva bhuta hridayam. To that person, that muni, who is sitting within the hearts of all living beings, anatosmi, I offer my humble obeisances. I offer my respects to that person. So this is Suta Goswami offering his respects to Shukadev Goswami. And our acharyas, they commentate very, very wonderfully on this verse, that actually this tan mayataya taravo bhinedus, this echo that came from the trees. Because Shukadeva Goswami is this Sarva Bhuta Hridayam. He's situated in the hearts of all living entities. Actually, it was Shukadeva Goswami who was calling back to his father, saying, oh son, in a way to instruct him, to say, who's the son here? I've happened to have taken birth in the womb of your wife, but you're Vyasadeva. You know that on the grand scheme of things, neither one of us is the father nor the son. And this pacified Vyasadeva because Vyasadeva is a great, great scholar and a great, great muni. And so what Suta Goswami is saying is he's praying that in the same way that Shukadeva Goswami, who is residing in the hearts of all living entities, Sarva Bhuta Hridayam, in that same way, let him reside in my heart and speak through my mouth. In the same way that he spoke through the mouths of those lifeless trees, those inert trees. So this is the mood that one should aspire to imbibe when they speak the Bhagavatam. So I pray that I may be able to speak something and may one day be able to become a receptacle for what the Bhagavatam would actually like to say, rather than whatever garbled nonsense I can come up with. So you can all help me with that. Please pray for me. And now we can begin. We're in the 10th canto. And quite amazing. We're fortunate. So fortunate to be reading this. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskrityam naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam mudirayat nashta praesha padreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki paramananda pataya prema vashaksharayate sarvada sarvasevyaya shri krishnaya namostume krishne svadamo pagate dharma gyana divisaha kalo nashta drisham esha puranarko dunodita. A, reading text 8 through 10. So 10 is on the board, I believe. So 10 is on the board, so I'll just read text 8 and 9, and then we can respond with text 10. Kridishyamanastat Krishna Bhagavan Bhavasamyuta Venum Viranayan Gopair Godhanai Samrito Vishat. Intending to engage in pastimes, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, accompanied by Lord Balaram and surrounded by the cowherd boys and the cows, entered the forest of Vrindavan as he played his flute. Pravalabharha Stabaka Shrabdhatu Krittabhushana Ramakrishna Dayogopa Nandritur Yudhur Jagu decorating themselves with newly grown leaves, along with peacock feathers, garlands, clusters of flower buds, and colored minerals. Balaram, Krishna, and their cowherd friends danced, wrestled, and sang. And now, text 10, we can all repeat, please. Krishnasya nirtyata kechich. And jhagu kechit avadayan. Venu pani talai shringai. Prasha shamsud atapare. Krishnasya nirtyata kechich. Jhagu kechit avadhayan. Venu pani talai shringai. Prasha shamsud atapare. Please chant. Krishnasya nityata kechich. Krishnasya nityata kechich. Avukechid avadhyan Inupani talai shingai. And word for word, Krishnasya nrityataha. While Krishna was dancing, kechit, some of them, jhagu, sang. Kechit, some, avadhayan, accompanied musically, venu, with flutes, pani talai, and hand cymbals, the shringai, with buffalo horns, prasya sham suhu, offered praise, ata, and apare. Others. Translation. As Krishna danced, some of the boys accompanied him by singing and others by playing flutes, hand cymbals, and buffalo horns, while still others praised his dancing. In the purport, the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Wanting to encourage Sri Krishna, some of the cowherd boys openly praised his dancing. Om Gyana Timinandasya Ghananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militangena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Hina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam He Krishna Kuruna Sindha Dina Bandha Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostite Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langa Ete Girim Yat Kripam Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataram Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Panchakalpa Tribhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Namo Mahabhadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tishe Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Krishna, good morning. This is a really short purport, a one sentence purport. So I'm gonna take the liberty to be a little audacious and what's the word I'm looking for? Ambitious. So please forgive me if my ambitions precede me and I don't quite make the mark. But we'll try and we'll see what comes out. So today is also the very, very auspicious appearance day of Sri Vamanadeva. So Harisham just gave a wonderful Sunday feast lecture yesterday about Bali Maharaj and his pastime with Vamanadeva and began describing it. And so I will try to go into some of the details about that. Actually, is it tomorrow and we're just doing the fasting for it today, or is the actual appearance today? Is anybody sure on that? It's tomorrow and we're fasting today for Vamanadeva. Okay, so tomorrow is his appearance day and today we're observing it. So at any rate, I'll speak a little bit about Vamanadeva and I'll try to tie a parallel from that pastime into what is here and into Vraj, because we're talking about Vraj. So Vamanadeva is a very, very interesting incarnation, even more so than some of the other incarnations that we hear about. He comes to accomplish a multitude of tasks. Every incarnation of Krishna, because Krishna is very intelligent, accomplishes many things at one time. Even with one action, sometimes he does 10, 15, 20, an unlimited amount of things. But especially this incarnation of Vamanadeva, we hear of a lot of things. Rather than just hearing that, yes, the Supreme Lord did many things, we actually hear of quite a few things that Sri Vamanadeva accomplished. So I just want to go over a little list of those, and then I'll pick one, and I want to expand on that. So first, he took birth as the younger brother of Indra to reinstate the demigods in their proper place and to restore universal order. From a very basic standpoint, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that I come in order to protect the sadhus and to punish the wicked and to reinstate Dharma. So in order to kind of reinstate the universal order, because even though the demons, they got what they got by the right means, at the end of the day, the universe works in a particular way. And the general way it's understood is that the demigods, they rule things, they worship Vishnu, that way the proper channels are there, so all of the people following Karma Kanda can get the results that they need. And so Vamanadeva, he comes and he reinstates that order. Second, and a little deeper, he fulfilled the desires of Aditi in regards to point number one, in regards to this reinstating of the demigods. Because of her own devotion and because of the dedication that she had for her guru, Kashyapa Muni. So he fulfilled her desires because she performed the proper channels and went through the proper recommended ways to worship him. Number three, by cracking the shell of the universe with his big toe when he leaped to take everything from Bali Maharaj, he allowed for the manifestation of the Ganga to come into this universe, which benefits everyone. It's even said that when the Ganga, after passing into this universe, passes down into hell, it actually purifies all the souls there at the bottom of the universe as well, anyone that comes in contact with it. So he literally benefited everyone from the top to the bottom by bringing the Ganga into this universe. Number four, he highlighted the exalted qualities of his dear devotee Bali Maharaj, who was the grandson of Prahlad, by putting him through the fire of ordeal, by putting him through this seemingly unfair circumstance that Hari Shyam told us about yesterday, where he went to him, as a brahmana should, and begged from him, and then, when Bali Maharaj did exactly what a king is supposed to do and gave him exactly what he begged for, he punished him, and he bound him, and he took away everything that he owned. So seemingly, he put him through this very unfair circumstance, but this was to highlight Bali Maharaj's devotion and his tolerance and so many of his wonderful devotional qualities that were there that he didn't mind at all. He didn't mind at all. Number five, he externally set in motion the circumstances which would later facilitate the Putana Leela in Vraj. Because Bali Maharaj's daughter, I don't know her name, but the demoness, his daughter, she saw Vamanadev and she thought, I really, 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 really want to mother this child. He's very small, he's a dwarf brahmana, he's very beautiful. So she just had this maternal affection, this vatsalya, come into her heart. I want to nurse him. I would do anything if I could have him as my child. But then when Vamanadev did what he did to Bali Maharaj in such an externally cruel way, her rakshasi nature came out, her demon nature came out, and her fangs sprouted, and she, you know, rakshasas are actually quite ugly when their true form is revealed. And she thought, I'll drink his blood. He's done this to my father, I want to drink his blood. I won't be satisfied until I kill this child. And so, actually, to facilitate those two desires at the same time, she took birth as Putana. So she got an opportunity to attempt to kill Krishna. You can't kill Krishna, so you can only get your desires insofar as they're actually feasible for reality. And she got an opportunity to nurse him. And then because Krishna is Bhavagrahi Janardana, he only took the pure desire of her Vatsalya Ras. And eventually the other one was discarded. And Prabhupada writes to us that she became a wet nurse in the spiritual world. And then number six, he fulfilled the desires of Bali Maharaj by staying with him in the subterranean heavenly planets. So the pretense of this is that Bali Maharaj is in a prison in the subterranean heavenly planets, and Vamanadeva is the guard who doesn't let him out. But the actual circumstance is that Bali Maharaj just wants to worship Vamanadeva as his Ishtadev, and so Vamanadeva is there accepting his worship for all of that time. So these many, many different reasons, and there are more. These are the ones I could think of and I could come up with on short notice. There are many things that this pastime elucidates for us. But the one I'd like to expand on a little bit, because any one of these could be stretched into a four-hour class, is that Aditi, she went and asked her husband how her sons be reinstated, because as a mother and also as a demigoddess, first she was feeling terrible that her sons were in such a deplorable condition and that they had lost all of their opulence, and she was feeling bad just like any mother would. And then second, she was feeling bad because she herself was also in a pitiable condition, and being a lady, you know, not being a deeply austere yogi, even though she was probably more austere than anyone on this planet now, being the wife of Kashyapa Muni. She knew how to go through austerities, but not being naturally inclined to that condition, she also wanted to be back in her normal place. It was difficult for her to see her husband go through what he was going through, and for her to go through it, and for her to see her sons in that way. And so she asked her husband, after he came out of meditation, she said, how can my sons be reinstated? That's what's bothering me. Because he detected that there was something wrong when he saw his wife. If you're married, you know, even if you have very close friends, if you're very close to somebody, you immediately know if something is wrong in their heart. You can see it in their eyes, it's all over everything about them. There's something wrong here. So Kashyap Muni, he said, what's wrong? Have you not been performing dharma? Have you not been feeding uninvited guests? What has happened? The ashram does not seem jubilant and festive and wonderful like it should. And she said, no, there's no question of that. I'm meditating only on you. Everything is being done. But I have to let you know I'm really suffering because I can't get this out of my head. I can't get this out of my heart that my sons are in such a bad condition. and we are in such a bad condition. Whereas we are devotees, we should be rightfully situated in Swarga. We should be where we deserve to be. And so, Kashyapa Muni, because he's Kashyapa Muni, he's a Prajapati, he has, compared to any one of us, an unbounded amount of knowledge, he laughed and he said, just see how powerful is the attachment to children in this world. Just see. He was able to say this to his wife because she was also sober and she could also gain some understanding of this. But rather than try to break that, he intelligently said, okay, what you should do, I see you have this desire and it's part of your nature. You can't let it go. I can't just tell you, give it up. It's stupid. It's Maya. Give up your desire for your kids to be happy. But what you should do is you should worship Vishnu with this desire. You should ask him. Because Vishnu, he's able to fulfill the desires of everyone. So you go to him, and I'm sure he will give you some way to make yourself happy. And he actually speaks this verse. He says, Upatishtasva purusham bhagavantam janardhanam sarvabhuta ghavasam vasudevam jagad gurum. He says, go and worship that supreme person, Janardana, who is situated within the hearts of every living being. Sarvabhuta ghavasam vasudevam jagad gurum. He is the jagad guru of the entire world. And by using this term, Jagad Guru, what Kashyapa Muni is saying is he's saying to Aditi, because she's a smart lady, she can understand. He's saying to Aditi that this person that I'm telling you to worship, he is the Jagad Guru. He only acts for the benefit of everyone. Everything he does is for the benefit of the whole universe. So if you just try to fulfill your desires on your own accord, then you will be taking from somebody and giving to somebody you care about. You will just be ensnared in the problems that are already going on, even though you're trying to find your way out. It's like a spider web. If a bug gets caught in a spider web, the more it moves, the more it becomes entangled. So he's saying, you approach this Jagad Guru, you approach Krishna, you approach Vishnu, and he can act in such a way that everyone is benefited. You get what you want, and everyone else will get what they need. Everyone else will get what they want. And if you do that, then you'll see some success. So she worshipped Vishnu by doing a payovrata, which is a relatively easy austerity that when I first read this, I wondered, is this still on the table? How's she saw Vishnu after 12 days. This is because of Kashyap Muni's potency. Because she drank milk and chanted some mantras. She only, for 12 days, her diet, that's paya means milk and vrata means vow. So milk vow. 12 days, she could only drink milk. I've done a 30-day water fast before. I've done dry fasting, things like that. Sometimes, like, is this still on the table? Like, just drink some milk and see Krishna. But anyway, this is what she was given by her guru, and because she followed the orders of her guru, in 12 days, Vishnu appeared in all of his glory and grandeur. And he said, I'm pleased, and I'm here. What would you like? And so then she said, in all honesty, I'm happy you came. Thank you, and you're so glorious and you're wonderful, but yes, I have a desire. I worship you because I want my sons back in heaven, and I want to be back in my rightful place. And so Vishnu, he says, I'll fulfill your desire. First he says, actually, that'll be very difficult because the demons, they did things the right way. They worship their guru, and actually all their potency is coming from the potency of their exalted guru, Shukracharya. And so I don't really have a right to step in and get in the way of that. You know, I'm passive. If people do things the right way, I don't interfere. But then he says, but you've worshipped me very nicely. And worship to me cannot go in vain. You follow the orders of your guru. He specifically says, under the guidance of Kashyap Muni, and because of the potency of his austerities, I'm fulfilling your desire. So this is very powerful for all of us to understand that Aditi's desire was fulfilled because of the power of her guru's potency, because of his potency. See, this leaves Vishnu in a quote-unquote sort of a bind. Because Bali Maharaj is a devotee. Now he's got a situation where the demons, they did things the right way, even though they're inherently, I don't know if it's inherent, because they're still souls, but they're in a very deep way demonic, so they don't worship Vishnu, or at least most of them. Bali Maharaj is the son or the grandson of Prahlad, so he is naturally a devotee coming from Prahlad. And Aditi has worshipped him in devotion under a Vaishnav guru. And so now he has to make everything happen. He has to make everything work. And he has to make everybody happy. And he has to ultimately benefit everybody because that's what he does. He's Jagadguru. And this is a very beautiful point because this is what Krishna does. It said, Samsidir Haritoshanam. All happiness, all perfection, Samsidhi. Siddhi means perfection, Samsidhi means complete perfection, complete happiness. It comes about by Hari Toshanam. When one pleases Hari, Toshanam means to please. And everybody knows what Hari means. So all happiness comes about when one pleases Lord Hari. Because Krishna, because he is the absolute truth, he is infinite, everything resides within him and on him as the foundation of everything. He is able to harmonize all contradictions, as Harisham explained to us a bit yesterday. He harmonizes everything within himself. And so when one approaches him, then no matter what type of adverse circumstance one is in, one will come to a solution. And one can come to a proper solution, which will be fulfilling not only for himself, but fulfilling for everybody around him in an inexplicable way, a way that can't really be explained. It can only just be experienced by having that faith and taking that shelter. And then seeing that, wow, I can't believe this circumstance turned out as good as it did. I'm sure all of us, all of you, I've certainly had experiences in my life where just by taking that leap of faith on the guidance of somebody who is above me, cracking my head, saying, you have to see it the right way, you have to see it the right way. By doing that, circumstances in my life worked out in an inexplicable way that's mind-blowingly wonderful. Things that I could not possibly see on my own before these things transpired. This is Samsidhir Haritoshana. When we please Krishna, then things work out. But then one may ask, in this story, if we know the Leela, Bali Maharaj rejected his guru. So on one hand, Vishnu has said, all of the demons' potency is coming from the worship of their exalted guru. And Aditi's is coming from her worship of her exalted guru, because she worshipped her husband very, very nicely, and because she carried out what he said to do. Vishnu came, and he gave her darshan. So it seems like a discrepancy on the part of Bali Maharaj. And when I was reading about this and kind of exploring it to find out a little more, I came across a very interesting sentence that our illustrious Acharya Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur shares. In the purport to that verse that I shared earlier, the verse goes, Sarva Bhuta Guha Vasam, that this person, this Jagad Guru, this Vasudeva, this Janardana, he's situated in the hearts of everyone. And so what Kashyapa Muni is saying, and the deeper understanding here, is that the Lord resides in everyone's heart, and he, as the super soul, will inspire Bali from within to reject his guru. So it's very, very interesting that actually what went on in this pastime is both of these great devotees took full shelter of the process through and through. Bali Maharaj, even being a devotee inside, knowing I live in a demonic dynasty, the people around me most certainly don't have the same intentions as I do, but I must follow my guru. I must follow my guru. He did that, and his potency came from that. He got the heavenly planets. He got the entire universe because of that potency. As Vishnu said to Aditi, because of that potency, because they did it the right way, as Harisham said yesterday. They did it the right way. And then, because he was a devotee of Krishna internally, Krishna inspired him to make that step and to reject his guru. Not that he rejected his guru on his own, but because it was some divine intervention or the super soul inspired him that give it up, because his ultimate goal was to worship Krishna. He knew Vamanadeva was, this is my Lord. He could feel it. He could understand. So I thought that this was quite interesting, and it elucidates this point, that taking shelter of Guru and Krishna, it harmonizes all contradictions and all opposing elements. And to the degree that we don't do that, to the degree that we, so to speak, try to have our cake and also eat it, which is an impossibility. If you eat your cake, you can't have it. And if you want to keep it, you can't eat it. So in trying to do that, in trying to take shelter of this world and pay lip service to taking shelter of Krishna and not actually take shelter of Krishna, we can't have either thing, actually. We'll suffer, and we'll suffer. And to the degree that we do that, because it's not a 100% or zero thing, to the degree that we do that, to that degree, we can start to feel spiritual consciousness. We can start to feel depth in our practice. We can start to feel these wonderful things that are the results of bhakti. That many of them, even though they're very spectacular, they're actually just side benefits, offshoots. They're like little ripples in a pond coming off to the side, because the real benefits are yet to come. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said that the only scarcity in this world is a scarcity of Krishna consciousness. Because there is no other scarcity in one's individual life. Because when one does some siddhir haritoshanam, then everything just works out. Everything will work out. Everything will work out. It just goes. It happens. This can be taken in many different fanatical colors and ways and things, and it can also be rejected as impractical and as, you know, not applicable to my life. But the simple thing is if we can find ways in our own lives, if I can find a way in my own life to implement this principle and grow the very, very small creeper of faith that I have in that reality, to that degree, my life will be happy. To that degree, I'll be satisfied. It's so simple. Prabhupada therefore said that bhakti is so simple, Krishna consciousness is so simple, that you can miss it. Because it really comes back to this very simple point. Samsidhir haritoshanam. Prabhupada would quote this many, many times. So Krishna, he's able to harmonize everything, because actually this is the nature of God. The nature of God, as I said, he contains everything. And what he doesn't contain is explained by the first verse of the Bhagavatam. What he doesn't contain is resting on him as the cause. We also hear sarvakarana karanam. He's the original cause of that thing. So ultimately nothing escapes that. So everything is harmonized within him, because actually everything is harmonious. We can't see, because of a limited perspective, we can't see the harmony that is happening in the world. We can't see that everything is actually falling together. Actually, in science, they have this thing called fractal geometry. And what fractals are is they're very, very, very intricate patterns that one can't really recognize unless one zooms way out and understands the math that surrounds them. Much of Vedic architecture, that's the word I'm looking for, is done. Like these Dravidian, or they say Dravidian, these South Indian temples. They have this really far out kind of fractal pattern going on the outside of them. But this isn't only man-made architecture. Actually, all of the beautiful patterns that we see in nature, mountain ranges, the way everything is laid out, the way things grow, the way things are done, everything is following a very, very, very intricate pattern. There's a pattern to everything in this world. Coincidences are an atheistic fallacy. So when one can see this pattern, and one can zoom out of one's very, very limited tunnel vision vacuum, then one can see that actually Krishna is orchestrating things through his different energies, not personally, because he has better things to do, frankly, than take care of the material world. So he just says, you take care of it. And everyone is benefited when they turn themselves towards Krishna. When Krishna is just there, everyone has benefited. Some other examples of this are the men on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So many Kauravas and the men fighting on the Pandava side, people with different motives, and people with downright bad motives and evil motives that Krishna came to wipe off the planet because they were causing so much strife to Mother Earth and to the residents of the planet, to Bhumi Devi. They all got liberation just by dying in the presence of Krishna, because Krishna is all good. His will is all good. What he does is all good. Kamsa attained liberation by meditating on Krishna out of fear, by wanting to kill him, by sending demons day after day after day to kill him. One time Kamsa was walking down his stairs and he saw a shadow under the stairs and he pulled out his sword and it was his own shadow. He was so, so terrified of Krishna. Bhayam, the deepest amount of fear. He would dream of Krishna killing him. He would have hallucinations in the day when he wasn't dreaming of all manner of horrible omens, terrible things, fully absorbed in meditating on Krishna. And he got liberation for that just by coming in touch, with Krishna. Putana, we've already explained. She got what she got, even though she was a demoness. She wanted to drink Krishna's blood. She's Bhavagrahi Janardana. She also wanted to mother him. And so that's what he took. He took that Bhav. These all seem quite contradictory. Somebody can attain liberation by hating God so much and being so terrified of God. And then God finds it. Anyway, you deserve here. Here's liberation, you know? Here's the thing that the yogis aspire for thousands of lives and then fail to get. Here you go. Take it. And these terrible impious kings on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, they came. They're supporting Duryodhan, who did more atrocities than practically. So many atrocities he committed against the Pandavas, who were exalted devotees, and they supported him full well all the way through. And he said, anyway, give him liberation. They can have it. Putana. Anyway, she can become a mother. She got more than liberation. She became a wet nurse in the spiritual world. She got to suckle Krishna as her occupation in the spiritual world, even though she wanted to drink his blood. So Krishna, he harmonizes all contradictions. And what to speak of these? These are very small, actually, because we're speaking about Vraj now. We're here in the Bhagavatam, the 18th chapter, in the middle of Vraj Leela. Some of the most exalted things in our philosophy are to come in the next 10 chapters or so. Next 15 chapters. The most amazing things that practically all of our acharyas' works are just commentaries on are to come in the next 15 chapters. We're here in Vraj. We're reading about Vraj. And what is the greatest contradiction? Vraj is the land where God is not God. In Vraj, Krishna is not God. Nobody has any conception that Krishna can possibly be God. Krishna himself is called Mugdhata. He doesn't know that he's God. He has no idea that he's God. He's Mugdhata. He's forgetful of that. Because it facilitates his desire to actually have loving relationships with the Vrajvasis. This truth is slowly unraveled as one progresses through the Bhagavatam, through this section. So I'll just provide some pramanam, because we have to back up what we say. That's what our acharyas have taught us to do. So just after this chapter, because we're in chapter 18, chapter 19 is the forest fire that Krishna saves the cowherd boys from. Just prior, we also experienced the forest fire, because there was a forest fire around Kaliya Hrad, around the lake that Kaliya was in. Because all the Vrajvasis, they were just so tired, and they laid down to take rest. And then they woke up in the middle of the night, surrounded by flames. And they all said, oh, Krishna, 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 Mahabaho, please save us, please save us. Oh, Gargacharya, he told us that you would save us from all these things, please save us. And he saved them. But then another forest fire comes shortly after. So after Pralambasura, in the 19th chapter, the cowherd boys, just after Balaram kills Pralambasura, they go on and they're having their fun, and then all of a sudden they notice that the cows wander off and they can't find the cows. And so going to look for the cows, they start to notice it's getting hot. What's that smoke? What's going on? And before they know it, they're surrounded by a raging summer forest fire. Vraja is a very dry place. It describes that it's not very dry in the autumn season in the next chapter, but to facilitate the Leela, apparently Vraj became very dry. So there could be a big, big forest fire. And they call out to Krishna, please save us. Oh, Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho, Mahayogin. You're the best. You have all opulences. You're so amazing. Please save us, save us, save us. And he says, close your eyes. And they close their eyes, and then they find themselves under a bandira tree, and there was no fire. And then we hear something very amazing. One of our acharyas gives some commentary, which I'll just read. Because it's, for brevity, it's better to just read it. This verse shows that though the cowherd boys had seen Krishna's amazing power, that awareness could not cover the sweetness of their Sakya Prem, as was the case of Arjuna and others. So Arjuna had Sakya Ras, but he was able to see the universal form. People in Dwarka are able to think, this is God. They have this as one of our later contemporary exalted Vaishnavas would say, this Prema Sankuchita. Their love is shrunken by knowledge, by jnana, by their knowledge that, okay, he's Dwarkanath, but he's the super soul, he's all of these things. We know, to some degree they know. They also don't, it's not like Vaikuntha, but to some degree they know. But these cowherd boys, they don't have this like Arjuna had. Yoga Virya means the power to attain or achieve extraordinary things. The miracle of getting saved from the fire was caused by Krishna's Yogamaya Shakti. After seeing Krishna's supernatural power, the cowherd boys thought Krishna might be a demigod, since he had done something impossible for a human being. Nevertheless, the boys considered, because we are Krishna's friends, we're on the same level with him, therefore we must also be demigods. Thinking like this, Krishna's cowherd friends became overwhelmed with bliss. So their Sakya Ras was indomitable. They went through that ordeal. They called out to Krishna, please save us, save us. He saved them. And then they thought, how did he do that? Maybe he's a demigod. Oh, that means we're demigods too. And then they went back to their jokes. Went back to their fun. Ah, you think you're a big man. You think you're a big demigod. We're also demigods. We must be demigods because I just beat you in wrestling yesterday. You know, like this. So their prema, it can't be conquered by this idea that Krishna is God. And then, in the very beginning of the description of autumn, which is the chapter after that, again we hear, this is in relation to Mother Yashoda's love for Krishna and to the elderly Vrajvasis. After hearing about the extraordinary feats of Krishna and Balaram, particularly the forest fire, because the boys, they go back every day and they say, oh, Krishna did this and he killed this demon and he swallowed a fire. And he did so many crazy things. Krishna actually gets in trouble one time because they go and they say, Krishna ate dirt today. And that's why we have this Leela where Mother Yashoda, she says, you show me, open your mouth. Have you been eating dirt? Because they're always telling them what Krishna does that's amazing or just what he does. Eating dirt, it's not amazing. Normal children eat dirt. It's amazing because Krishna does it. So after hearing about these extraordinary feats of Krishna and Balaram, the elderly Vrajvasis thought that they were two eminent demigods. Due to their strong bond of love, they never thought Krishna and Balaram were God. These exploits simply nourished the sweetness of their relationship even more. It is not stated anywhere that their Vatsalya Bhav, or parental love, ever decreased a bit. This would have happened, however, if they thought these two boys were God. So this is Sri Vishwanath giving us quite an unequivocal statement that they cannot harbor the conception, really even for a moment, that Krishna is God. They think every other thing, maybe he's a demigod. Gargacharya said something, he's imbued with the power of Narayan, but he can't be Narayan. I can think of two other instances, which I've heard in lectures. One is that Krishna purposely demonstrated this to Uddhava, because he wanted to heighten his rasa, he wanted to heighten his understanding. He sent him to Vraj with a message. And the first message was for Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda. And it was Atma Tattva. It was to go and to say to them, why are you lamenting? Your son is the super soul. Your son, he's situated in the hearts of every living being. You're never separated from him. Why are you worried? You're crying. You haven't eaten since he left. Why? Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. He's the super soul. He's the super soul. And Nanda Maharaj, after a while, he just said, okay, Uddhava, thanks. You can go. It's good. We're happy to hear your message. And then after Uddhava left, Mother Yashoda, who was sitting in the corner, just crying, she couldn't say anything. She asked Nanda Maharaj, do you know what he was saying? Could you understand it? And Nanda Maharaj said, yes, I figured it out. I needed a minute to think about it. But he's saying that God's name is also Krishna. He's saying God's name is also Krishna. He explained all these things. So he's saying our son is Krishna. And Krishna is also a name for God, who he was describing. Because they can't harbor this idea. They just right over the head, in one ear and out the other. He's the super soul. And then one time, after Govardhan Leela, all of the Rajvasis, the men, they came to Nanda Maharaj and they said, your son, he does too many wonderful things. Maybe he's Narayan. Maybe he is God. Gargacharya said some really amazing things. Maybe your son is God. And Nanda Maharaj says, this is very grave. You think my son is God? You think Krishna is God? And he laughs, a big hearty laugh. He says, you know what he did yesterday? Yesterday, he couldn't get the milk in the house. He couldn't get to the milk pots because we tied them up a little higher. And he peed on the floor. And when I went to him and said, why did you do this? We give you so much. We give you everything you want. Why did you do this? It's ridiculous. He said, I didn't do it. You did it. He lies to me all the time. He steals. He lies. You think he's God? And in this way, all the cowardmen say, okay, yeah. What? We know him. He does these crazy things. He does so many wild things. He can't be God. So they can harbor this conception. They can harbor this conception for even a moment. It doesn't come. But this is a contradiction, even from a normal religious perspective. If I go out on the street and I tell people the highest level of God realization is that when you get there, you can't know God as God. You have no idea who God is. Or if I go, what to speak of the street, if I go to a church and I try to explain that to somebody, if I go to a mosque and I try to explain, when you get to the highest level of realization, God is no longer God. If I go to a South Indian temple and I tell them the highest realization you can have, the highest relationship you can have with Narayan is that he's not God anymore. He doesn't want to be God. He isn't God. God is no longer God. They can't hold that conception. There's no question. What? It doesn't make sense for the atheist. It doesn't make sense for somebody who's aspiring for Vaikuntha. Anybody in between. It doesn't make any sense. But Krishna, he can harmonize these contradictions in such a beautiful way. So there's... it's 8:27. The reason I said this was ambitious in the beginning is because I was aiming at one last point that I'd like to make, and it'll probably take me the next 5-10 minutes. So I'll beg forgiveness for going a little over 8:30. Please forgive me, Prabhu. When I was a kid, I was an atheist. As diehard an atheist as you can be, it's not a very intelligent, logic-backed philosophy. But I considered myself an atheist mostly because of the way public school systems do a great job of demeaning religion in very subtle ways, sometime around middle school. And I grew up in a small town in the southern part of North America, in the good old South. I grew up down there, and so there were a lot of diehard Christians. And one of my favorite things to do whenever I got into a dialogue with any one of these people, because they're generally quite pushy, would be to ask them my favorite question, which was, okay, you believe in God, but can God create a stone that he cannot lift? Which is a pretty genius question. Whichever atheist thought up that question it's probably the best piece of logic that they've ever churned out of all of their arguments. Because most of the rest is just based on obscure science that, unless you dedicate 12 years of your life to astrophysics or whatever, you're disqualified from even speaking about. But this thing, it's quite good. And I held it for quite a long time, just as my go-to thing, like, this is, God can't exist. It doesn't make sense. If he's God, if somebody is omnipotent, if they have all power, does he have the power to make something that he's subordinate to? Does he have the power to create something that is stronger than he is? Because if he can, then he's no longer God. And if he can't, then he's not God in the first place. So it's pretty good. And it worked for a long time. And then, when I started to get into spirituality and I started to get deeper into my understanding of things, I just suspended this. It went away, really. I didn't think about it because it was something I did in my childhood. And so it wasn't burning there. But at some point, as I was becoming a devotee, this popped into my head again. And I couldn't reconcile it. And it just, it wasn't this major doubt. Luckily, I was just able to, anyway, I can't deal with that now. There must be an answer. And Prabhupada gives one very simple answer, but because I have an intellectual twist, and Prabhupada was obviously just answering that in a way that's just be quiet about it, don't worry about this. He said that yes, he can, and then he lifts it, which to me, it doesn't intellectually satisfy the question for me, because it means he could lift it all along. He created it, and then he lifts it, because he could lift it. But one day, I got to thinking about this very deeply, and it just kind of catalyzed in my brain that actually, if we take this question, because we can deconstruct it, it's just a piece of material logic, and we deconstruct it a little bit, can God create a stone that he cannot lift? The question really is, can God be subordinate to something and also maintain his omnipotence, maintain his position as God? Which, when we look at Gaudiya Vaishnavism and we look at that question, we practically are the only philosophy that has an answer to it and also has many, many, many examples of it happening. Because we follow this Shakti Parinambad, which means that Krishna is Shaktiman and he has many Shaktis. He does things through his Shaktis. He's the controller of the Shaktis and he does things through his Shaktis. And what is his principal Shakti? His principal Shakti is Fladini. It's love. It's Radharani, but in a more general way, as Radhanath Maharaj explained to us the other day, even the loving propensity in the jiva is ultimately coming from Fladini Shakti. And Krishna, it's the linchpin of our philosophy, that Krishna is completely subordinated by love. He's fully subordinated by love, yet he remains God. He tells Durvas Muni, in the ninth canto, he says, Aham bhakta paradino, hyaspatantra iva dvija. He says, I am not independent. Swatantra means independent. It's used often to speak about Vishnu. It's used often, I think it's a name of Vishnu in Vishnu Sahasranam. It's one of the thousand names of Vishnu. Swatantra, completely independent. But here, Vishnu is telling Durvasmuni, actually, confidentially, the real truth is I am aswatantra. He says, he aswatantra. Certainly, I am aswatantra. I'm not independent at all. I'm dominated by my bhaktas, by my devotees. They have a hold on me, and I have to do what they say. He's telling Durvas in this situation, I can't help you. You're asking me for mercy, but I don't have mercy. My devotee has my mercy. I hear you out. You know, I'd help you if I could. Something about it. But I can't do it. My hands are tied. God is saying his hands are tied. And then he tells this famous verse from the Bhagavad Gita. He tells it to Sudama Brahmana. He says, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhaktya prayaschati. He says, Sudama, I don't care what you've brought me. I don't care if the rats chewed on it. I don't care if you sweat on it under your arm. I don't care if you were munching on it on your way because you had nothing else to eat. I don't care about that. I only want the bhakti. I'm helplessly compelled to towards eating that because of the love you've imbued it with. And then, what are we going to hear later? In the next 15 chapters of the Bhagavatam, he tells the gopis, Napareham nirvajya samyutam, I can't even reciprocate with you. You've beat me. You've beat me. You've finished me. Your bhakti will have to be its own reward because you won. And Rupa Goswami tells us in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the final step of prema, the final result, the final, we could say, accomplishment, is Sri Krishna Akarshini. That Krishna is hopelessly attracted by prema, and he's completely subordinate to it. So we can actually go further, but we're out of time. So, I'll leave you with one small verse, and then if there's maybe time for one question, then, or a comment, then we can do. But, yat atra skalitam kinchit, vidvamsa padayantitat, yat atra shoshtavam kinchit tad gurur eva menahi. If you've seen something nice here, skalitam, or some fault, then please correct it. You're all vidvamsa. You're all learned sadhus. You're all bhaktas. And if you've seen something nice, yad atra shoshtavam kinchit, tad gurur eva. It's my guru's. Menahi, it's not mine. It's coming by mercy. Just like with Aditi and Bali Maharaj, all of their potency has come through that. If I have any potency, which I don't think I do, if anything has been nice here, it's simply coming from the Parampara on my Gurudev. So please forgive any mistakes, any problems, and if there are any comments or questions, Hare Shamprabhu. And I apologize, like I said, one sentence purport, and it was difficult to stick here.
Thank you for this nice class. I was just wondering how we, since one of your emphasis in the class was the ultimate realization of God is that he's not God. But when we begin our spiritual practice, the foundation of that spiritual practice is we're worshiping the ultimate object of worship, right? We're directing our worship not just towards some fantastic creature, but that which is the basis of everything. And in fact, we have to be really convinced of that. Sambandhagyan. I have to be really convinced that this is the ultimate object of love. This is super soul. This is this is the beloved I've been waiting for so many lifetimes, you know, because he is in that special position. So I was just wondering, how does one unlearn that? Or does that unlearning happen consciously? Does it happen unconsciously? Like, how does one unlearn that? To go in that direction of God not being God. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a really, really nice question. Well, I haven't unlearned it, so that's quite a high place. But as far as I understand, our acharyas explain that one catches that understanding from somebody who already has it, who has caught it before. Because ecstatic Vaishnavas have come to this realm of existence, like Rupa Goswami, like Srila Prabhupada, who are situated in that, who know that. And so by associating with people who have associated with them, and then ultimately because Sadhu Sangha is not a thing that is bound by, you know, temporal space and time, by coming to a point of purity where one can actually associate with those people, then I think one can have a deeper realization of those things. But I'm happy that you highlighted this point, that it's also very important for us in the beginning to first establish proper sambandha. I'll always remember this, when Jayadev Goswami was teaching, I think it was King Birhambir, his Samadhi is just next to Jayadev Goswami's in Radhadamodar Mandir. There was a young prince, Lakshman Sen is his name. Lakshman Sen, a young prince. And he was teaching him Gita Govinda, which is, I mean, Prabhupada said, we can't read it. He said, you can sing the songs in Sanskrit, but you can't read the translations. That's how high this book is. It's very, very esoteric. very intimate dealings of Radha and Krishna. It's sung to Jagannath every night. That's one of the main things that Jagannath enjoys. He actually goes out many, many times just to hear Gita Govinda from some Orissavasi, from some Purivasi. He'll be out in the garden singing, and because they have so much bhakti, he leaves Jagannath Mandir at night to go hear them sing it. That's how dear this song, or these songs are to Jagannath. So when Jayadev Goswami was teaching this, because he wrote it, so he was teaching it. He was teaching it to Lakshman Sen. In the middle of it, spontaneously he realized, I haven't taught this boy the tattva. I'm teaching him the deepest things and the deepest, most esoteric realizations that one can possibly have. And I haven't taught him the tattva. And therefore he said, Stita Veda Payodi. He said this Dasharvatar Stotram. Jai Jagadisha Hare. To say that this boy that you're hearing about, and this girl, this boy, he is actually that Nrisimhadev. He came as that Buddha. He is that Matsya. He is that Kalki. He has done all of these things. You have to know this. Otherwise, you won't be able to understand what I'm teaching you. So it's very important that we have the proper Sambandha first. But it's also important, and because we're reading the 10th canto, and so we can get around it any other place, we can say, okay, yes, we can hold that to the side, but we're here. It's important to know these things so that we can keep them on our head, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati told us, Pujala Ragapati. Pujala Ragapati Ghorava Bhange. He said, we worship these things by keeping them on our head. But we have to know them. Otherwise, we can't keep them on our head. Otherwise, we'll keep some rubbish on our head, thinking that it's that. Someone will tell us, oh, this is the goal of life. How many lives have we wasted like that? This is the goal of life. This is the goal of life. This is it. This is it. There are many different levels of realization we've been given. It's a very special gift by our acharyas, by Rupa Goswami, by Srila Prabhupada. They came to give us something very, very specific. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give something very specific. You read the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita and it's like, whoa, that's specific, very special thing. And so we have to know what that is and worship it. And then pray that one day you please let me become simple and enter into that. Because actually being a Vrajvasi, it's about simplicity. It's about, it's about many other things, but one linchpin of the Vrajvasis is simplicity. I've been meditating on this recently, that Putana came. And they didn't. So, oh, she must be a good person. She must be wonderful. And they thought, oh, compassionately, oh, she said her baby's died and her breasts hurt, so she has to give her milk to someone. So they let her go to Krishna. They don't mind. And then Krishna takes care. Krishna protects them. So this is another point there's no time to go into. So we'll, if anybody else has anything, if not, we'll stop here. Subal Peru, please. There we go.
I wonder. When we read in the previous chapters, specifically I remember on Mother Yasoda, when she saw the universe of form, and that this whole discussion also on how Vasudev and Devaki, they go from awe and reverence to, you know, Vatsalya.
They do the switch.
And
yeah.
Then, go, but then on Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj, they're always on that platform of Vatsalya. Yeah. And the explanation that was given is Yoga Maya. Mm. That when Yoga Maya acts, then it makes you forget. So by Krishna's potency, then we forget. Yeah. We forget that he's God in order to facilitate that relationship.
As an answer to that, yes.
We have to qualify. We have, like, you answer, by taking shelter on the devotees and being taken, and trained like that, then you come to that qualification. Mm. And then, we see in the life of the acharyas, of the Sikh Goswamis, and also the Vaishnava acharya, Srinivas acharya, comes to mind, and Narottam Das Thakur, how they go from this awe and reverence worship, and all of a sudden, you know, having a much more intimate relationship by the Krishna's potency of mercy. So we're just going to add that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a very succinct, nice answer, that the way it happens, Yogamaya. We can't remember anything if Krishna decides he doesn't want us to remember it anymore. So, Gyanam Smritir Pohanam Cha, he says in the Bhagavad Gita, knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So if we qualify, then no problem. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Sri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai. Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai. Sri Sri Gauranitai Ki Jai. Giriraj Govardhan Ki Jai. Vaishnav Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai.